Hi, I'm David Kaplan, and you're listening to the Sports Talk Live podcast. Enjoy the show.
Good afternoon. Welcome to a Friday edition of Sports Talk Live, brought to you by the Chevy Silverado with Jason Goff, David Haw, J.J. Stankiewicz. I'm David Kaplan. All right, Mitchell Trubisky speaks for the first time since right around the 30th of December, and he was emphatic, David Haw. This is my team.
You know, Cap, this might surprise you, but Mitch did everything right today. He said all the right things. He hit all the right notes. I'm glad he was pissed off. I'm glad he admitted it. I'm glad he didn't try to hide any of his feelings. He's right. Nick Foles is coming for his job, and it's his job to lose. So I'm not sure that he could have done much better than he did today. Complete down to the last detail of the man in the arena frame behind him, just to make the point, the strongest statement of everything he said, but Mitch Trubisky had a good day.
JJ.
So one thing, Cap, that Mitch said that I didn't necessarily agree with is that he feels like he is the edge over Nick Foles in a shortened preseason because he knows all the players. He knows Allen Robinson. He's been throwing with A-Rob and Cohen and Montgomery and Demetrius Harris. And he thinks that, you know, Foles not having that opportunity to get to know them will give him an advantage. And I'm writing a column on NBCSportsChicago.com right now, Cap, that you're not going to like, that he's wrong about that. That the advantage is actually to Nick Foles in a shortened preseason because Foles does not have as much to do and as much to convince Matt Nagy and the Bears coaches as Mitch does, because Mitch has been the guy who's oversaw an offense that was fourth worst in points last year, dead last in yards per pass attempt last year, while Foles is off in Jacksonville. So Mitch has to convince coaches that the last 2-3 years are not predictive of what he will be in 2020. He has to have as many practices and as many games as possible to do that. When you cut out practices and you cut out games, that gives him a harder climb to win the job.
Jay.
I'm Mitch. I try to learn from some of the mistakes that I've made or some of the things that have affected him, because he's, you know, he's shown that he's vulnerable in certain instances where people start to get to him. I wouldn't be saying that, but I'm cool with the fire. We'll see if it's applied when they actually get out on the field, though.
David?
I don't have any problem with it, because if I'm in his position, I'm looking at this the exact way that he described it, and I'm trying to put as positive of a spin on it as possible, and I'm going to say, yeah, I'm going to take advantage of the only thing I can, familiarity, camaraderie, all the intangibles, which should be in my favor if I'm number 10. And so I'm looking at it from that perspective, thinking he couldn't have said much more than he said today that was right.
Well, I don't agree with JJ's premise. I understand JJ's premise, but you're going under the premise that Nick Foles is already the leader, that it's his job, and Mitch has to catch up to him, and I don't believe that.
No, Cap. If you're starting here, I think that Foles has less to do to get to here to win the job than Mitch does, because there's that baked-in trust that Matt Nagy has with Nick Foles that I don't know how he really could have it with Mitch. You know, there's that factor. There's also the factor that Nick Foles got guaranteed $24 million in his restructured contract. Mitch is due $9.2 million this year and nothing after it. So from a trust perspective, from a financial perspective, those two things point toward Foles. But the Bears' best-case outcome, Cap, is that Mitch wins the job and he becomes the guy they thought he was going to be 3 years ago when they drafted him. That is what they still want to happen. But I think realistically they have to think that it's going to be Foles as their guy, because they can trust him to go out and make those throws. You don't guarantee $24 million to a guy, even if it's over 3 years, if you don't think he can step in and be a starting quarterback if Mitch shows he cannot be that guy you thought you were getting 3 years.
I mean, it's 18 to Mike Glennon, so I don't think the money matters at all. I think it's irrelevant. Jason?
Yeah, whether it's accelerated or not, Mitch has put himself in this position, and the Bears have put himself in this position. Like, usually we're sitting back waiting for these years to unfold, and you get the bumps along the way. Ever since that playoff performance where we saw some throws out of Mitch, where we're like, okay, this is what they were looking at, this is what they were talking about – you know, never mind the fact that they couldn't muster three touchdowns to win a game against, you know, that team, the Philadelphia Eagles. So in my estimation, I'm sitting back. If I'm Mitchell Trubisky, I know how much is on my head. I know they brought another dude in here. If the pressure don't bust pipes, like JJ said, it'll make a diamond. We're still waiting for this diamond. And we're still waiting, by the way, because Matt Nagy had a worse season to me than Mitchell Trubisky did last year. So if I'm Mitch, I know that this is it. And if I'm Matt Nagy, I'm thinking, okay, I may have a year's worth of leash if I pull the string and pull the trigger and pull the other guy in there. So there's a lot going on right now, and I don't know if the cross purposes are going to help develop Mitchell Trubisky.
One last thing on this point, then we'll move on to the NBA. When Mitch is out there with Allen Robinson and Cole Kmet and Demetrius Lewis, and we've got David Montgomery there, Tariq Cohen there, is that an advantage to Mitch when Nick doesn't have that?
I know it is. It is.
Quite here a bit.
I think it is because he just knows the guys too. But I also think it's worth pointing out the growth in Mitch Trubisky from a maturity standpoint. This is the same guy that was talking about turning off the TVs at Hallis Hall today, talking about how he's welcoming this challenge and trying to look at the things in a positive way. And Cap, I do think that he's trying to look at that working with his teammates, guys he knows, as an advantage.
Cap, you know who said it's my year and went and threw with his receivers off the field a couple years ago? Your guy, Mike Glennon, there. So to flip it back on you about Mike Glennon, A, the money does matter, and B, just because you do these things and say the right things does not mean you're going to be the starting quarterback long-term in the season.
Yeah, those guys are your guys until you fail enough that everybody gets cut or don't get paid, you know?
That's it. And bottom line is, if they have a bad season, there's probably a new GM, maybe a new head coach. So, and certainly a new quarterback. All right, let's talk about the NBA. Jason, you do a lot around the NBA. You've done a ton of NBA radio in your career. The NBA players, some, not all, but at 50, 60 are going, yeah, I'm not so cool with this whole bubble thing in Florida. J.J. Redick's retweeting an article about the coronavirus spike in Florida. So do you think this is a good idea? Do you think we'll play?
Do I think it's a good idea? I don't think it's a good idea that anybody be exposed because of work. And that's what's happening right now. Like, we're starting to see 35-person staff. By the way, speaking of bubble, I got to let my kid out real quick. So 30.
You know what he's talking about, Cap, is –
35 people can be around. Hold on, Jay. 35 people can be around the teams, right? But in the end, now you're talking about three assistant coaches. You're talking about staff. You're talking about PR. You're talking about security, all those things. And now there are a lot of guys who are like, yo, I'm not comfortable being away from my family, or I have family that I want to travel with me. This thing is the reason why on the podcast a week ago, I didn't rush to say that this thing was going through, because I didn't think it would be going through with the smoothness that a lot of people thought. People thought, oh, the NBA is coming back. Everything's great. Yeah, but you have a lot of players who are sitting in the cut like, wait a minute, if I'm the seventh seed, why would I don't care what you think, why would I risk getting sick or getting somebody in my family sick, or the fact that this thing could get started up? And if you have someone get sick during the second game of the NBA finals, you're going to shut it down and wait 2 weeks or whatever the case may be, and then make a player on the opposing team? All right, everything's cool. Like, there's a lot of logistical things that the NBA still has to work out, and I don't know if anyone is sure about the full onboard attachment that these players have, because let's face it, some of them do live in rich people bubbles too. So a lot of guys are getting information, real information, for the first time in these last couple of weeks, and being isolated and being away from things, you know, you think differently, you start to move differently, and all of a sudden you're thrown back into the mix in a way that you've never had to perform before too, Cap. Like, if I was to tell you that you had to do shows for the next 3 weeks, sequestered on an island, you know, in a bubble at a complex, and you couldn't see your family, your shows would be different. So that's I think finally it's reaching a lot of these NBA players, and Damian Lillard was the first one to really be like, nah, I'm not with this. A lot of these NBA players are sitting back like, hey guys, I understand what the salary cap has to be next year, but if I'm financially secure in this moment, do I want to put my family and myself at risk? I think that's a leap that NBA fans and NBA observers kind of took just because everybody's ready to get basketball back.
David?
Fair enough. There are going to be logical concerns that everyone's going to have, and I'm glad they're expressing them now rather than later. But those are hypotheticals, and they're going to be hypotheticals that are just impossible to answer. I think as long as they try to do as much as they can in terms of, again, the testing, tracing, and treatment, and have protocol in place in the event that somebody does come down with it, hopefully not, but they need to have these safeguards in place, then you give the players the option of, is the risk worth it? And because the reward, you know, you think having a season and being able to maintain the health of the league and looking forward to, you know, winning a championship for those teams that will, it all is going to come down to trust. And that's what we've gone back to, what we've talked about. The trust between the commissioner and the players to this point has been strong. And will that faith in Adam Silver, you know, get them through this next hurdle? Maybe, maybe not, but they want to make sure before they go forward.
All right, we got a break, but JJ, real quick, your thought?
If cases are going up in Florida, it's going to be, I just don't see how this goes off without a hitch. You look at soccer over in Europe and Germany and Italy and now England restarting, those cases have been going down. And that's how you're able to restart. Trying to restart a sports league while cases are going up, that seems kind of risky.
All right, we've got to take a timeout. Ed Howard will join the show. Looking forward to that next.
Listen up, Bulls Authentic fans. The My Teams app is the perfect app for you. Get your favorite team at your fingertips. Don't miss out on the best Bulls coverage in the city and read in-depth articles. What are you waiting for? Download the My Teams app now.
Welcome back on Sports Talk Live. It is my honor, my privilege. I get to talk to the newest member of the Cubs organization. He is shortstop from Mount Carmel. He is Ed Howard, came out of the Aces program, Jackie Robinson West. And I was telling you before we came on the air, like the NFL draft, the NBA draft, guys are going to play right away.
Right.
I love baseball, so I literally got up from the dinner table to go sit at the TV to see if the Sox were going to take you. And when they didn't, I'm like, please take him, Cubs. How does it feel to be a Cub?
Man, it's crazy. It's a surreal feeling. You know, it's the same feeling, you know, I dreamed of it being. You know, I'm excited to go. I'm excited to be a hometown guy. I grew up watching the Cubs a lot. It's amazing. I'm ready to get going and, you know, hopefully get to Wrigley sooner than later.
Somebody who's become a very good friend of my radio and TV shows is your mentor, Tim Anderson. Tim Anderson comes on with me. Anytime I ask, he's there. He's a wonderful guy. What has he meant to you during your development?
Yeah, you know, I've gotten a little closer to Tim Anderson, you know, these past few months. And, you know, he just reached out to me, and he's a great role model for me, you know, on the field and off the field. You know, we got a lot of common. He just talks about what it's like being a shortstop daily, you know, in the MLB and the things he go through physically and mentally. So it's definitely amazing that I have a guy like him that I can reach out to. You know, he's been great. I'm always rooting for him, you know. It's a friendship and a sabon, you know, outside of baseball as well. So you know, that's a guy that I respect.
Tim and I had this long, interesting conversation about not just bat flips, but about trying to bring personality to the sport of baseball. I hate the unwritten rules. Oh my God, it's a 2-0 game, and he's got a no hitter in the eighth. You better not lay a bunt down. No, I don't want you to get a no hitter against me. You better not bat flip because it's disrespect. Like, right. I want the personality to come out of the game. For people that haven't seen you play, do you play with personality and you show Ed Howard?
Nah, I believe I do. You know, I always play the game hard. I just kind of do me. You know, that's one of the things Tim talks about a lot, just be yourself. And I'm all for it. If you want to bat flip. If you want to play with excitement, do it. You know, I like that type of stuff. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm just myself. And, you know, I use it on bat flip, but you just never know. I'm just going to play the game and have fun with it. You know, I always play hard and just see how it goes.
Do you believe, and some scouts I've talked to said that if there was no global pandemic and there was a senior season in baseball, Ed Howard's never on the board at 16. He's probably not on the board at 11. Do you believe that?
100%. You know, I talked to my parents and advisors. I truly think, if I had a spring season, I think I could have been a top 5 pick. But I feel like everything happens for a reason. You know, I feel like I was destined to be a Cub, so things happen. So I'm excited either way it goes. I'm ready to get going and get back on that field. You know, I was excited for the spring season, though. I felt like I had a lot to show.
I remember Theo Epstein, when you guys visited Wrigley, I was there that day. And there was a great picture of you, I believe, with Starlin Castro. There is this great video that I retweeted yesterday where Theo Epstein said, hey, finish school, high school, go off to school, and then we'll come get you in the draft.
Yeah.
And, it's out of high school instead of college. How does it feel to look at that tape and go, holy smokes?
Yeah, it's so ironic. You know, it's crazy. I seen the video too on social media, and I can only just smile at it. You know, it's pretty crazy. And it was pretty ironic that the camera, you know, zoomed in to me right after he said it too. So it's definitely it's a special moment. You know, it's a great time.
What is the process like, Ed, to go through, whether there's a pandemic or not? Everything is exhaustive. They're going to talk to your parents. They're going to talk to your coach. They're going to watch you play. They're going to look you in the eye, and they want to hear the right answers. So take us through that process with the Cubs.
Yeah, you know, it was a lot. You know, the Cubs have been watching me since I was a sophomore in high school. So, you know, they've seen me a lot, and I got to get on Zoom meetings and calls with them and talk to those guys. And then I went down to Wrigley and kind of took a tour of, like, the stadium and hitting the cages and things like that. So I've been talking to them for a minute, but for the most part, I just try to be myself. You know, whatever team drafts me, which was happen to be the Cubs, I just want them to know, you know, who they're getting. They're getting me. And I feel like the Cubs know that, you know. So when I go through that, when I went through that process, you know, I was just being myself, and it played out the way I wanted it to play out.
When I watched the video of you and the pick is made and somebody reaches over, here's a Cubs hat, and I'm sure they've got them all for wherever you're going to go. You hugged your mom and you hugged your dad. Can you tell me a little bit about that relationship? Because parents, I've got four boys. We give up everything so our kids can have what they want.
Yeah, they sacrifice a lot, getting me out to those travel ball tournaments all the time, and the money they spend and getting me to travel places, man. It's I appreciate them so much. You know, that's why it was such a great time to get up and have those two people next to me and just hug them and finally get a sigh of relief, you know, that this journey, you know, this goal we had since a young kid is finally coming true. You know, it's a great feeling. But I love those two so much, man. They've done a lot for me. They sacrificed everything. So I'm glad, you know, they can have this moment too.
How did your dad specifically help shape your sports career? Because the emotion, like, you hugged your mom and it was awesome, but it looked like you and dad, there's this bond there.
Yeah, you know, my dad, he's a real big sports guy. You know, when I was younger, you know, I played three sports. I played basketball, baseball, and football. But he pushed me to be the best I can be in all three of those. You know, whatever I wanted to do, you know, he pushed me. He taught me a work ethic, I feel like, at a very young age. And he was a guy that didn't let me settle for just being average. You know, he kept pushing me to be the best I could be. And, you know, I'm just glad I got to get that experience and moment with him. And it's honestly the same with my mom. You know, she was the same way. She was one of the first people to get out in the backyard and throw wiffle balls to me and throw the beach balls when I was like 5 years old. So both of my parents, you know, they taught me a work ethic and kept me focused, you know, at a real young age. So as I got older, you know, it was just already instilled in me.
I would love your perspective on this. I was a former college basketball coach, and I used to hate when I would go see a kid. And I went to Mount Carmel all the time to see Antoine Walker and Donovan McNabb and Jay Driscoll and all these guys on those great teams. But I would hate when I would ask a kid, what do you do in the fall? What do you do in the spring? I play spring basketball. I play fall basketball. You played three sports, and I've always believed, don't specialize at that age. Play them all. Enjoy your childhood, and then the one that you're best at, see where that takes you. How did you end up playing all three sports?
Yeah, so when I first started, man, I played, like I said, basketball, football, baseball, and even soccer. You know, I started off with those four. I gave up soccer first, and then I just kept playing, you know, those three, those main three. Then I gave up football around 10 or 11 years old. Then I played basketball on until my freshman year of high school, and then ended up giving that up. But I always knew, you know, baseball was my main sport. But at the end of the day, you know, I was always an athlete. I was an athletic kid. That's why I kept playing those other sports. You know, I kept playing basketball. Because I enjoy playing it, but I was good at it because I was an athlete. And I think playing those other sports, you know, I think it translates to baseball. Just being that natural athlete, those sports help you out a lot. So I definitely think it's beneficial to play multiple sports.
Ed, give me the best single piece of advice your dad gave you. Father's Day's right around the corner.
Best piece of advice, man. He's gave me so much advice over the years. That's a tough one. Let me think. You know, one thing my dad, he preaches a lot to me is is the circle that I surround myself with. You know, he teaches me a lot about keeping a great support system around me. The guys that I hang around with, you know, the guys that I trust and believe in, you know, I have to have that strong foundation. You know, he's a guy that's really helped me create that. So, man, he gives me advice on so many things. You know, he really helps me out a lot. So I can go on and on with about advice from him, but you know, that's one of the main ones that stick out.
Last thing for you, Dan Kantrovitz, who is the VP of scouting, after the draft was over when you were picked, I played the tape 5 times on the radio. He said it literally was the absolute perfect scenario. We were holding our breath. That was the guy we had targeted all night long. How does that make you feel?
Man, that makes me feel great. You know, I want to play for a team that wants me. And, man, I'm all in with the Cubs. I'm glad I can stay home. I'm glad I can play for them. And I'm excited to get going. So I can't wait till baseball comes back. I miss it. I really do.
Congratulations to you, to your family. Stay safe, stay healthy, and we look forward to seeing you on the field.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you. That's Ed Howard. We'll take quick time out. More STL right after this.
White Sox authentic fans, if you don't have the My Teams app yet, what are you waiting for? Stay up to date with the best Sox coverage in the city and read articles from White Sox insiders. Bring the South Side to your home and download the My Teams app now.
Welcome back to Sports Talk Live. This Sunday night, Jason Hayward, Allen Robinson, Thaddeus Young, and Sam Acho join Lawrence Holmes for a roundtable discussion, Race in America, a candid conversation in reaction to the global outrage over the death of George Floyd in police custody. Tune in at 7 p.m. on NBC Sports Chicago. All right, Sunday night, guys, we are going to have the long gone summer. Sammy Maguire. JJ, what are you most looking forward to out of this?
Nostalgia, Cap. I was 9 when that year happened. I went to the game against the Brewers where Sosa hit 3 home runs. That was in June where he hit 20 that year. He hit one down Kenmore. I will never forget that moment. I'm just looking forward to reliving some of those awesome moments from that summer. I don't care about the steroids. Give me the awesome moments.
Yeehaw.
What I want, we won't get. Transparency, accountability, and an apology for bringing us down to Florida 5 years ago, Cap, and backing out the interview we had planned.
A little inside baseball there. I can dig it, David. I get it off. I'm looking forward to reliving it as an adult. I was 18, and I was in school, and I had a dude who lived down the hall who was like, did Sammy hit a homer every single day? And after a while, I just started lying to him. He thought Sammy hit 85 of them after a while. But I'm just looking for that ride down nostalgia, you know, lane that we get used to with a lot of these 30 for 30s and documentaries.
All right. You guys have a wonderful weekend. Please stay safe and healthy, and we will see you all.